Friends, you're listening to Irish Radio Network, USA, irishradio.com worldwide. I am delighted to welcome Fergus O'Dowd, who is TD, a Member of Parliament, Fine Gael, and matter of fact, he has represented the constituency of County Louth for the last 20 years, a former senator and mayor of Drogheda. As I welcome Fergus O'Dowd, I know what a timely guest to have this day, so we welcome and thank Fergus, who is chairman of the Oireachtas Joint Committee on the Implementation of the Good Friday Agreement. Fergus, first of all, you are indeed very welcome.
Thank you, Ian. It's a great honour to be on your programme, and you know that you have a huge listenership, and I'm aware how lucky I am to be interviewed by you. And, you know, at this important time for our country. You know,
I wish your brother Neil might say any kind word over the and let's get this out of the way in the interest of full disclosure. Neil O'Dowd, your brother Neil O'Dowd, founder of Irish American Magazine, Irish Voice newspaper, Irish Central, author, and indeed, we should mention that on the lead up to the Good Friday Agreement, Neil O'Dowd led the American interest, the American group, and rallied at a time where little was known about the conflict in Northern Ireland to begin with. And so the O'Dowd legacy continues. This is a particularly upsetting week with the announcement from the British government that they were going to ignore the protocol, the Northern Ireland protocol, and just plow ahead and do whatever they wanted to do. I don't think any of us were surprised, because every indication was from the beginning is that with Britain's own problems with their leader, Boris Karloff, but then that would be pushing it. Okay, Boris Johnson. The British government at this stage of the game is in a heap of trouble themselves. But the general feeling that we get, at least here for now, is that this might be a deflection in terms of the problems that they're having. Though again, as I say, this is nothing new. Perhaps you might tell us, Mr. Chairman Fergus, about the protocol that has been signed onto. Yeah, can you spell out the protocol?
Yeah. But basically, during the Troubles, as we call them, over 3,500 people died as a result of violence, most of them, sadly, obviously, in the north, but everywhere as well. And so out of that came, because of the American intervention of President Clinton and the chairmanship of Senator Mitchell in particular, all the parties got together with the British and Irish government, and they signed the Good Friday Agreement 24 years ago. And notwithstanding the difficulties there are between orange and green in our country, still nobody was being killed in our streets. So it's been hugely beneficial to the people north and south, to the economies north and south, and also excellent relationships between Britain and Ireland in terms of their government. So what happened was that Britain then decided to leave the European Union, and that meant that six of the counties in our 32 county state had left the European Union, and most people in the north actually voted to remain. So the compromise was to allow the north of the country, those six counties, to actually have full access to the European market, what they call the single market, so that they could export their goods or import products without additional tariffs. And that would be, at the same time, they would have full access to the United Kingdom markets. And the difficulty was that, obviously, we had to protect the single market, which meant that if goods were being brought across to the north and smuggled, for instance, across the border, that they would be breaking, they would be undercutting legitimate and appropriate trade. So rather than have all of these customs posts on the border, or, you know, hundreds and thousands of checks every day on people and goods and so on, the protocol said, to protect the Good Friday Agreement, to keep peace in our island, that the border for the importation or export of goods would be on the Irish Sea, which really meant the ports. And that made sure there wouldn't be a divided country in terms of customs barriers, but it also meant that checks could be made to protect goods that were going to the north only and would be consumed there, separate to goods that would be coming south of the border. So that's what the protocol is, and it was a compromise. It was signed to and agreed by the British government on his, Boris Johnson signed up to this. But then he decided, because of the political situation in England and because of the situation in the north, under pressure from the Democratic Unionist Party, that he would do away with that protocol and that he was going to send goods across to Northern Ireland with the minimum checks and with no credibility or no data being sent to the European Union. And the other point was that he didn't and doesn't accept that that the European Court of Justice would decide legal arguments on either side, which would be the appropriate thing because it's about the European Union and goods into the European Union. So that's the complexity of it. So then he also introduced legislation which basically would give an amnesty. So if I said, as before a special commission, that my killing of John or Mary or whoever it might have been, that it was accidental or that it was, you know, that they did this, that and the other, but then once they would say or do that before the commission, they would be given an amnesty, which means they couldn't be prosecuted for it. So basically, rather than the agreed process was that victims and their families will be at the centre of all of this. The people, the perpetrators, are at the centre of it. So that's creating huge friction. So our trip to America, my committee has 16 members on it from the Southern Parliament, and 18 of the Northern Ireland members of Parliament are entitled to attend and speak, and 10 of them do so. So it's a very important committee, and it means that we speak for the vast majority of people north and south, but we do have our political differences, obviously, but we have no difference on the Good Friday Agreement. So our trip to Washington was to meet with as many politicians as we could at the most senior level, and indeed with the State Department as well, to support what President Biden is saying, that he wants to make sure that there's no change to the Good Friday Agreement and that peace must come first. And so that was what it was all about. So we met with, apart from the President and Vice President, whom we didn't meet, we met Chuck Schumer, who's the most high-ranking politician in the country after them. We met with Senator Pat Leahy, who's the fourth most important politician in the country. And we met with a number of senators, including Jim McGovern, Brendan Boyle, and so on. And we had very good and very good engagement with them. And also we met with some of the relatives, Mark Thompson, who's CEO of Relatives for Justice. He was with us on a number of those meetings. And also, very importantly, Danny O'Connell and Martin Galvin from the AOH. They were involved in a number of our meetings as well. So, you know, it was a very important process, and we met a number of the senators. As we know, they issued that statement this week, and it supports the Irish government on, and, you know, keeps America, who are so important in all of our process, it keeps them fully backing, you know, the peace process which they created, Adrian.
Yeah. Absolutely, and you know,
we met Mike Kelly as well, who's a Republican. We had a very good chat with him, and we met Richie Neal. We also met Bruce Morrison, Kevin Sullivan, and his colleagues from the Ad Hoc Committee to Protect Good Friday in America. So we really had a very important, a very useful number of meetings, and it all culminating with that statement from the congressman.
Sure, yeah. It was indeed, you didn't have to go down. It wasn't a hard sell, because, in fact, you know, as you mentioned, the president, Joe Biden, Nancy Pelosi, Speaker, everybody was on board, but there is a burning question.
Sure.
That I think we'd all like the answer to, and that is, since the United States, since the position of the United States is and has been that the US-UK trade agreement will not be resolved until such if, and particularly if there is a violation not just of the Good Friday Agreement, but of international law, you know, condemnation across the world, saying, what the hell is this about? Because you don't have to go back to the signing of the Good Friday Agreement. This was agreed to, you know, as late as 3 years ago, or, you know, on the protocol.
Yes, absolutely. So, yeah, it was part of the general election in Britain that Brexit was done. Get Brexit done. This was the solution. This is what they said they did, and they signed up to it, and now they're reneging on it, which is unacceptable. And your analysis there is excellent, Adrian, on this.
Yeah. Also, I think that most of us might be scratching our heads with respect to the lack of negotiation. I mean, there was plenty of time. There has been plenty of time, you know, to sit down and work this out without, again, without the arrogance of saying, you know something, we've made our decision, goodbye, that's it.
Yes.
That is particularly disturbing at this time. Like, unless they were living under a rock, they would have to know that U.S. Trade agreements, that the U.S. Has at every level said that any violation, any renegotiation of the Good Friday Agreement is not on. It's not open for further discussion. That's
absolutely, yeah. Absolutely, Adrian. I think that is key, and you're quite right. I mean, if a contract is a contract, and between two governments who both jointly agree something, and then once and signs up to it, makes it part of a general election that they win strongly, as Johnson did in the UK, and then says, look, we're going to tear this up, and you can do what you like. But I know that yesterday, on Friday, that there was a statement from the European Union and the chief negotiator there, whose name is Sefcovic. He said that he was more than willing and able to solve this problem. And he produced documentation that showed that, you know, if I'm exporting a lot of goods into the north of Ireland, that it'll take about 3 pages once a month to make sure all the process is covered. And that's thankfully very little, bureaucracy, but it must protect the good. It must protect the single market. And so he says, if Johnson comes to the table, they can do this deal straight away. But Johnson knows that. He's known about that. Our Foreign Minister Simon Coveney has been very clear on it, and our Ambassador Dan Mulhall has been very clear on it in terms of his contact with people in America. And we met, Adrian, we met with the State Department officials as well. We met Stacey Bishop, who is the Acting Director of the Office of Northern European, Baltic and Arctic on Security Affairs. And we met, you know, they're very senior in our team. And, you know, they listened to everything we said as well. So, like, our job is to make sure that everybody in the United States is aware of the dangers and obviously that there is a solution and it doesn't involve destroying the trade agreement that we want. But
yeah,
I mean, we don't have a problem with Britain having a trade agreement with the United States, but they can't threaten the good of the Good Friday Agreement to get that.
No.
By America saying, look, you can't do this if you're going to destroy the peace that is there. America is right.
Mm-hmm. You know, also, I think the underlying issue is that if the position now of, you know, the partnership of the Good Friday Agreement, if the position is, well, you know what, we're going to chip away at this. Okay, let's start here and see how far we get with it, because God knows if we can get this, if we can, you know, chip away at this one, then God gives us a kind of an opening to take other parts of the Good Friday Agreement.
Absolutely, but, absolutely, absolutely, yes. And it means that all the work and all the, you know, I mean, the people who died as a result of all of this, and particularly the victims of violence, you know, they're not going to get justice. And it's not about, you know. It's about holding people accountable to those who have suffered most. It's not about protecting the perpetrators, and it's not about breaking or challenging the peace that is there. And, you know, I've met nobody in America that agrees with what Boris is doing, but he's doing it, and he is the Prime Minister, and, you know, it's an arrogant, insensitive, unacceptable way of behaving, and, you know, we're pulling out all the stops in this one, Adrian, and that's why it's so important that your listeners can hear what we're saying.
Right. In addition to which, you know, we don't have a lot of time on this one. I mean, if it looks like, you know, the strong hand, you know, of the empire is not gone away, and to hell with what you know, you thought you were getting, you're actually getting, you know, what we feel, you know, is in our best interest. The entire Good Friday Agreement, I don't think it's an exaggeration to say, is under threat.
And the other point is that there was a very important election there recently, only about 6 weeks ago, where the actual, for the first time ever, in the six counties, as we call them, of the North, that there is not a unionist majority, that it would be a nationalist who would be the first minister. So, and there's demographic change coming as well in the North. There's also a big growth of voters who don't support either green or orange, but are voting for a very important party called the Alliance Party. So, you know, so like, there's big changes coming. And, I mean, the unionists have to accept that they are, you know, that they're no longer ruling the roost, but that we have a very important role to play in keeping their entitlement to be British and to remain British all their lives, and yet participate in what we call a new Ireland where, you know, as our Taoiseach says, it's a shared island, and share everything, and that's why we post about $500 million over the next few years into Northern Ireland to improve infrastructure, roads and cross-border tourism and education and so on. You know, so we're putting our money where our mouth is, you know, on this, but we also want to say clearly that we absolutely respect the unionist commitment, you know, to their cause, and there's nobody going to take that away from them or force them into anything other than a shared future.
Shared future, but off to a poor start. There was an election, you know, and that election, the outcome of that election, was obviously, you know, an eye-opener for the Unionist Party, in particular Northern Ireland. But had the Unionists, the Unionist Party continued to rule the roost, as it were, there would have been no question whatsoever about re-establishing, you know, the assembly in Northern Ireland. It would appear to me, and to many of us anyway, that this at best is childish, and at worst to say, well, you know, we have a little bit of experience with that on our side, but that's scale for law, a story for another day. But to say, okay, well, we didn't win, so we won't go into government.
That's right. So there'll be nobody, and there's 400 million, which the executive has at their disposal to give support to the people of the North as the cost of living goes up, as it does in America. And they can't spend one penny of that until, obviously, the executive meet. And they're not going to meet, so that money's not going to be spent. And poor people won't get the support for their heating and their energy bills and so on.
Yeah.
It's just not acceptable at all. But that's the Unionists at the moment. That their position is unacceptable, and it's very selfish, and it's very... It weakens them, I think. It makes them look awful, like... You know, they're just putting their heads in the sand, really.
Right. Now, what is... Are the Unionists... Can they use, you know, the protocol, the decision by, Britain to just ignore the Good Friday Agreement? Can that be used, or is that, say, see what we mean? I mean, what is the position, the Union's position on the project?
Well, some of the Conservative politicians in England are saying that the legislation on the protocol will take a year to go through the English Parliament. And what they were saying, that they were hoping for, that the DUP or the Unionist parties would go, would go back into the Assembly, elect a Speaker, and accept the position as Second Minister, basically. Or it's really joint First Minister, to be honest, like they both have the same powers. But Geoffrey Donaldson, the leader of Unionism, is saying that, you know, he'll make up his mind on this in his own good time. So he's not saying yes even to this awful legislation. He says, I want to see not the day it's published, but the day it's actually made law. So, like, they're playing hardball, but it's the people. His own people are losing out as a result of his intransigence. And it's really, you know, for the new Ireland and for young people and for families and for, you know, for the future. You know, we've all got to live and work together, and putting all these barriers, in terms of a policy that is head in the sand stuff and is dividing rather than uniting people, instead of bringing together, it's separating them. And you have the English Prime Minister egging them on. The one most important thing of all is that the Good Friday Agreement was only possible, apart from American big involvement, was because the British and Irish Prime Minister were hand in hand and worked together and negotiated together over a long period of time to make sure it happened. Now, the Irish government and the English government, the relations were never as bad because of all these threats that Johnson is making. And like, when that's happening, you know, you're going back years and years and years, which is not where families and young people want to be.
Would it be unreasonable to think that part of the acceptance, if you want to call it that, is that, you know, that Boris Johnson is actually rattling sabres, and by the time, that it comes round to any formal or implementation, that he'll be gone anyway, because his poll numbers, I mean, he barely survived, you know.
But 40% of his own party voted against him, but that doesn't mean that they won't support this legislation. you know, but he is in serious trouble. And you're absolutely right. This is distracting, you know, from his view. But he's playing a game, to his English members of Parliament, and Northern Ireland and Southern Ireland are the victims of his political misfortune right now, and that's not good at all. That's just unacceptable from the Irish government and indeed all the parties in Ireland.
County Louth, granted that there is no border by virtue of the, you know, Good Friday Agreement, but it was always known as the border, one of the border counties in Ireland. It's obvious that, you know, there is a huge stake, you know, in this resolution, particularly for the previously at least known as the border counties. Could you explain to us the difference between the border, the elimination of the border? What has that actually, what has that actually resulted in?
Yeah, I think if you take it and you pick the right county in the south, and the one just above Louth is County Down. So basically, when all the troubles were there, the unemployment in the two major towns in beside the border, although I live in Drogheda, which is bigger than either of them, but the two major towns along the border, Newry and Dundalk, unemployment was extremely high. There was a lot of trouble. There was a lot of people unemployed. There was huge. In the north, there was a lot of people who were killed and murdered and maimed.
Yeah.
So that was the troubles. The Good Friday Agreement came and that stopped, thank God. And then what happened? Dundalk and Newry Chamber of Commerce got together and they developed policies working together. Employment grew, particularly youth employment, and both towns prospered hugely. And now the Irish government policies is that Drogheda, Dundalk and Newry were on what we call the Belfast-Dublin Economic Corridor, and they're all designated as three huge growth centres for economic development and for investment and for education advancement and so on. So all of those good things are at risk if the border comes back in terms of the customs border.
Yeah.
And it could very well mean that, something like 70% of people coming into the north of Ireland come through Dublin. So it's just unacceptable that there will be additional pressures on them to do an ESTA. You know, like when you're going from Ireland to America,
right.
You'll have to tell them that you're going through. And it just doesn't make sense, and it'll affect tourism. The other people we met were the Northern Ireland office, based in Washington, and we had a very good chat with them, and they're doing extremely well up to now. And they're very, very concerned of the attractiveness, just what you're really talking about, of places north, and indeed we are about places south of the border, in terms of inward investment. And if there was a return to the troubles that we had, and at this moment in time there is absolutely no sign of that, but, when things move into extremes, when there's a vacuum of power, other people move into that space. And many people who would go into that space, would not be the people we would want.
Yeah.
They would have extreme views, and hopefully this won't happen. So there's lots of risks there. But yes, the question is, the economy's prospered under the EU. The economy's prospered very much under the Good Friday Agreement, and you don't want to cancel all of that and put it to one side and, send things back to where they were. So that's what we're trying to ensure that doesn't happen.
Yeah. Finally, I would like, for the benefit of listeners who perhaps do not know or understand the issue, the legacy issues, of those who were murdered, slain, some of them permanently, disabled as a result of the troubles in Northern Ireland. I think a lot of people would have difficulty at this point in understanding what it is. What is the huge objection for Britain? If Britain and Ireland, you know, have been, benefiting from, you know, from that association, why would the British government not want to resolve, you know, issues and looking for amnesty? God knows they were never good at amnesty in the first place. But isn't that kind of another indication or example of arrogance as well?
It is, of course, and the key point is that there was an agreement on in 2004 called the Stormont House Agreement, and what that said, that victims and their families would be, this is all about them and making sure that they can know what happened, that there will be truth, absolute truth available to them, and that there would be a process, a commission that people would go before and they would find out more of how their loved ones died or slain. So the issue then became the reason why, and we had John Finucane with us, who's a Sinn Féin MP. His father was murdered, and he was murdered when John, I think he was 6 years old, having his dinner with his family, and it was an appalling evil act, because he, not alone, murder is bad always, but he was a human rights lawyer and he was defending people to protect their rights. So, like, the issue is that he will never find out, or his mother will never find out. His own mother, that's John's mother, will know what happened to her husband. So the issue then is the Stormont House Agreement would help bring closure to that process, and whoever may or may not have been involved in that, that would become known. And then it would be up to the Director of Public Prosecutions to decide, well, just say it was me that did the killing. Well, you know, they would say, well, you gave witness and you said this, that and the other. You know, so I will decide as Director of Public Prosecutions that, yeah, you will be prosecuted in the courts. Now, you know, but the thing is that, you know, a lot of these people are older people, and obviously, you know, the problem is trying to get credibility from the witnesses or be able to remember exactly what happened. But those families are always entitled to the truth, the whole truth. And if somebody's been prosecuted for murdering your father, you know, that should be done independently, or not prosecuted for murdering your father. That's what the DPP does. But that was all taken away in this legislation, and the commission would meet. And if I was the man who shot somebody, I could say, well, look, I was defending myself, or the story he gives. If he says, or she says, I believe that what I'm saying is the honest truth, well, then the commission have no choice but to say, okay, you've got amnesty. So that's absolutely. So,
yeah.
And the other thing, the accountability. You see, there's a special accountability on the forces of law and order in the state, you know, that they act in due process. So if the murder of anybody was done with what they call state collusion, or with the knowledge or the wink, the nod and the wink from somebody who represented the government of the day, well, that's a huge, hugely bad and unacceptable involvement. And if they say, you know, well, if you just say that you acted in good faith, blah, 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 or you lost the head in a row or whatever, you know, that is not acceptable in a democracy. So, you know, the victims were obviously have been waiting many, many, many decades now for the truth, and they want closure and they're entitled to it. But you can't accept ever, you know, and the problem now is that not just children of people murdered, but their grandchildren, it's going through what they call transgenerational. You'll never get closure. Communities will never recover from all this evil killing and murder on both sides, let me say, on both sides. Unless they find out more about it, and if somebody's going to be prosecuted or not, that it should be with an independent legal authority whose judgment is not based on me saying that's the truth, Johnny, you know.
So what would, and it's becoming a mystery as to why, the U.S. government, who again have pledged support to not just Ireland, but to, the people of Northern Ireland, who are saying, don't go there, because if you do, it's going to cost you in terms of, you've no business trying to negotiate with us unless you adhere, get that problem resolved. Would this, or is there a desire, say, in Ireland and in Northern Ireland, to have a, let's say, a George Mitchell, an envoy, if for no other reason, to actually bring the message and bring it clearly, yes, that these are not idle threats from the United States, and that in fact by doing so, there would be a lot of motivation in this for Irish America, who for the most part assume everything is fine in Northern Ireland and they have a peace process. Isn't it going very nicely, thank you? Would this not be an ideal time for our government to say, hey, listen, let's do it? Or is
You're absolutely right. Yeah, we discussed that as well. We discussed it with the representatives who met in Congress, the senators and the congressmen. We discussed it also with the State Department officials. And as I understand it, it is under consideration, under active consideration, but they haven't reached a decision on it yet. But it is clear that you would need somebody, a man or a woman, who is George Mitchell, who is head and shoulders, in terms of his integrity and his acceptability to both the nationalist and the unionist community to do such a role. And I mean, people people like Bruce Morrison, people who are exceptional people and are extremely well known and influential and fair and even and balanced. I know that some names have been mentioned, but it has to be somebody really who's just, who has.
Yeah, it can't be in any old. Yeah, definitely no, can't be in any old body.
No. But I think, yes, I would certainly support that, and so would, I believe, my committee. And I think it's part of the solution. And clearly, America is giving this proposal at the very highest level a great consideration, which we very much welcome. And if we didn't have you guys in Irish America, in America, we wouldn't have the access. We wouldn't have met the State Department's official. We wouldn't have met Chuck Schumer. We wouldn't have met Brendan Boyle. We wouldn't have met Richie Neal.
Right.
And that's because of your listeners, and that's how important your listeners are. And people in the AOH as well. They were very helpful, very, very helpful to us. Extremely helpful, I have to say, along with, obviously, clearly, a very hard-working and respected ambassador, Dan Mulhall. So, there's a huge support for getting the Good Friday protected and finding a practical solution. It's like if you're making a cake, the European Union is saying we're putting these ingredients in there, but we're also saying, or they're saying, you can put your ingredients in there as well. But when the cake is baked, it must be stamped, that this is what we agree, but it doesn't break the single
right.
That's the key. So we have no problem at all with that,
Yeah, and it's great to have all the goodwill, to have the commitment, of so many, of the powers that be in the U.S. government. So I would hope, and I think a lot of us would hope, that getting an envoy in over to Northern Ireland, somebody who represents the already huge commitment of, the President Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer's and all the rest of it, it would appear to me that enough time has gone by that somebody should be, you know, somebody should be selected and get over there as soon as possible.
Well, that's what I hope will happen, certainly.
I want to, again, thank you for spending the time with us. And my guest friends is Fergus O'Dowd, a member of the Irish Parliament, chair of the Oireachtas Joint Committee on the Implementation of the Good Friday Agreement. Good luck to you. We're rooting for you, for your committee. And yes, this might be a wake-up call for those who think there isn't much we can do now. Yes, there is. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Aidan. It's a great honour to be on your program. And I wish you and your listeners, a lovely summer and peace in our land.